Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, April 1st, April Fool's Day, but I doubt there were any April Fool jokes in the marketplace today. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson here for our weekly look at market activity and talk about a busy week, the last week of March. Started out on Monday with a housing report that again pointed to the fact that the housing market is up and down because that pending home sales that was issued on Monday of this week, that's contracts to buy previously owned U.S. homes, rose sharply in February, reversing the previous month's steep decline. As the volatility of the data continues to make it difficult to figure the strength of the housing market, the National Association of Realtors said its pending home sales index rose 3.5% for the month of February. Then there was not the report, but certainly the long-awaited speech before the Economic Club of New York, delivered by the chief of the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, had a little impact on the market, but not very much. Then, March 31st, a busy day in the agricultural report area, grain stocks report released for the quarter, and the big one, the planting intentions report. That had a major impact on corn prices at the Chicago Board of Trade, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And then, of course, this morning, the Labor Department issued the employment report for the month of March, and that showed that employment increased solidly in March. Wages rebounded, underscoring the economy's resilience. But the Federal Reserve is expected to remain cautious in raising interest rates this year due to slowing global growth. But it's interesting, following the report this morning, to see again what an impact employment numbers could have on the Fed and the decision to increase interest rates or leave them alone. All sorts of speculation across the board from some analysts who said we could see 3 or 4 interest rates before the end of the year, and others saying, no, we'll get 2 increases and that will be about it, but the first one could be in June. Well, your guess is as good as anybody's. But non-farm payrolls increased 215,000 last month. Data for January and February revised slightly down to show 1,000 fewer jobs created than previously reported. The average hourly earnings increased 7 cents. And while the unemployment rate rose to 5%, from an 8-year low of 4.9%, that happened, they say, because more Americans continued to return to the labor force, a sign of confidence in the jobs market. And the labor market in this country has largely shrugged off slowing global economic growth, a strong U.S. dollar that has hurt manufacturing and, in many cases, the export of some of our products from the United States. And going back to the Fed Chief Yellen's comments at midweek before the Economic Club of New York, she had this to say, that they were going to proceed cautiously. One analyst reacting to the report this morning said it was another solid report. As far as the Fed is concerned, it doesn't change anything for them. I think given what we heard this week from Fed Chair Yellen, their focus is elsewhere. And so anyway, those are some of the reports. But then that planting intentions report sent corn prices down about 4%, because the number that came in that planting intentions report was higher than any of the private estimates going into the report. They basically, and private forecasters and private companies like Allendale in their survey looking for the number on corn acres right around 90 million. And the highest guesstimate on the floor at the Board of Trade was 91 million. So when the number came in at 93.5 million, it caught a lot of corn traders by surprise. But today, a day later, there are some who are saying, well, that survey on intentions was taken the first 2 weeks of March, and we've seen some weather changes, and we have seen some price changes in the market. And now, as a result of that higher planted acreage corn number and the lower corn price, because we dropped in as much as 18 cents for the day on Thursday. So now analysts are saying, well, the number will probably come in the June planted acreage report lower than the one that came in the planting intentions report, because with prices where they are on the corn crop at the moment, that might take some acres out of corn and put them into soybeans. So the reports that came up, definitely interesting and surprising, and I think Max is going to talk about that with our market guest here in just a few minutes as yet another of the changes that sometimes come as a surprise. Back to the employment report this morning, there is a story this week that there will be some employment number cuts by Boeing. Boeing said it will eliminate about 4,000 jobs in its commercial airplanes division by the middle of this year, and another roughly 550 jobs in a division that conducts flight and lab tests. The plane maker will reduce 1,600 positions in the commercial airplanes division through voluntary layoffs, while the rest of the cuts are expected to be completed by leaving open positions unfilled. As of December 31st, Boeing had a total of 161,400 employees around the world. But of course, the impact of this job cut will again certainly affect the economy in the state of Washington and in the city of Seattle. So all of that that really kept the markets churning and kept investors guessing, trying to figure out where we're going. Back to Janet Yellen, she was pretty cautious in her comments at the Economic Club of New York, saying the central bank would proceed only cautiously as it looks to raise interest rates, and pushing back on a couple of her colleagues who have suggested another move in the interest rate picture maybe just around the corner. But in her first comments, since the Fed decided to hold rates steady 2 weeks ago, Yellen said inflation has not yet proven durable against the backdrop of looming global risks to the U.S. economy, concerning the low oil prices and concerns over China. And speaking of oil, we again saw a sharp decline to end the trading week in the oil market. The market today ending with crude down $1.55 at $36.79 a barrel. It lost 7% for the week after gaining 4% in the first quarter and 14% in March. Prices barely reacted to data showing U.S. oil and gas rigs falling for a 15th straight week. That put that number at the lowest level since at least the 1940s. But that oil market has been tough to figure out because over the past 6 weeks, oil rallied in a rebound from 12-year lows after major producers within and outside the Organization of the Petroleum Exporting Countries floated the idea of maybe freezing output for oil at January's highs. But now, Saudi Arabia said, we're not too interested in doing anything to curtail the oil market. So for the week, the S&P rose 1.8%, the Dow rose 1.6%, the NASDAQ rose 3%. And we ended the trading week with the Dow Industrial Average gaining 107 points today, 17,792. The S&P 500 gained 13 points today to end the week at 2,072. And the NASDAQ Composite gained 44 points today to end the week at 49.14. So a quick look at the markets, but we're going to get more reaction on the crop planting intentions report when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
A lot of people talked about that planting intentions report this week. And Max Armstrong sat down with a gentleman who's been involved in the agricultural community in several different ways over the years, Steve Barr from St. Louis. And Max, I guess you talked to him about the corn number and the planting intentions report.
Yes, Orion, that report on intentions sure was sobering, with the idea that we'll have to deal with more crop acreage, and if the planting season goes fine and the crop yields are superb, yeah, we could have much more crop to market and have to deal with persistent low prices for a while. I talked about that the other day, dealing with these peaks and troughs of the agriculture economy with someone who's watched this for a while, with a little bit different perspective. He's not a full-time farmer. He's not involved in the crop input business, but he's worked around a lot of people and worked for a lot of people who are. Steve Barr is chairman of the Osborne & Barr Advertising and Public Relations Agency, headquartered in St. Louis, with an office also in Kansas City. And he's watched this ag economy over a period of about four decades. As we visited the other day, he offered this insight.
Having been in the ag marketing business since 1973, you definitely see cycles, and this is not a pretty one with grain prices where they're at, but things always improve. You can't predict the weather globally, and we're going to assume we're at the bottom of the price range for corn, beans, and wheat, and hoping for upside from here. But a lot depends on the weather, as you know, and politics and everything else going on. So it's an interesting cycle we're in.
I visited with some folks in the farm equipment industry a few days ago, some executives who said, you know, we think we might be at the trough here. There's some positive things that we're hearing from dealers, and you would think that those guys are pretty close to the woes in the countryside.
You bet, and I was involved in the farm equipment dealership business, and I think it is. I think it is bottoming out. I think things look very positive from here on, and again, we assume some decent things will happen on the weather side, demand side, I hope. I think supply side, I think we're going to produce a lot of grain again this year if weather cooperates. So we are in a trough. I think there's nowhere to go but up from here, hopefully, and it's going to be good, I think, in a year or two.
Will this kind of economic scenario have a chilling effect on some things that really matter? And one of those I would ask you would be research and product development that we need for the future. Another one might be the brilliant minds that we need in agriculture, who 2 years ago or 3 years ago might have looked at ag and said, yeah, you know what, this is rip-roaring, I want to get into it, and now might be saying, I could find a different industry.
I don't sense any decline in interest and budgets for research. I think people are looking ahead and see the future of ag and, you know, increased productivity, sustainability. So I don't see any downturn in spending on research at all. I think as far as people coming into the industry, I think with the data plays going on, climate would be one example. I think there's even more interest in agriculture as a career, profession, and business. Lots of interest from Silicon Valley. And I think it's good. I think everything's good. There's more interest in ag now than I think there ever has been.
That sustained period that agriculture in the United States enjoyed certainly set this industry up for weathering the storm, wouldn't you say?
I would say so. I think... Uh, I think dealers, farmers are well equipped for this downturn. I think we learned a lot of lessons from the past downturns, and I think we're in good shape today. I think it's going to be good.
Here's a little bit of a different area that I would ask you about, government. And it has always played a very important role in what happens on our farms across the country. And it's a very different scenario in Washington now, as you know from watching this scene, than the kind of spirit of cooperation that we had in writing farm bills in 81 and 86 and so on.
So that's a really interesting question, and I won't pretend to be able to predict what's going to happen, but I know our past experience at Osborne & Barr and with our clients with the USDA, for example, has been really good. And I think like any other client or entity, I think if you have a good program, a good idea with the USDA, EPA, I think they'll certainly take a look at it. But it is a different environment now, and I wouldn't even pretend to predict what's going to happen with ag and our federal government.
Does it suggest, though, at the very least, Steve, that farmers have to really be engaged in that process in one way or another, whether it's individually or associations or both?
I think there's no doubt farmers must be engaged in the process, and I think this convention's a good example of how they are engaged in a very positive manner. And our experience with USB and knowing the folks at Corn Growers, for example, I think it's the best thing in agriculture, farmers willing to step up and get engaged and be involved and spend the time and effort. It takes a lot of time.
One more thing I'd ask you about is this generational change on our farms today, and there's a lot of focus on that. The fact that, you know, the guys who own the farms have quite a bit of snow on the mountain right now, and there's a tendency sometimes to not pass the reins as readily as the generation behind them would like to see. What's your overall assessment of what this means to the future of agriculture and our ability to withstand this challenging period?
So, Max, we've gone through that same generational change on our farms in Saline County, Missouri, and my father just turned 92, and he's been very, very smart about how he turned over the operation, and he developed a farm manager over the past few decades, and it's been a tremendous experience for us. But it takes a lot of planning, and I think there's a real opportunity to help farmers who need to go to the next generation of management, family or otherwise, and it represents a great opportunity for clients and the industry as a whole. But we must address it, and it's not easy. It's very difficult to accomplish. But we've been fortunate. We've had a great experience with it.
Steve Barr, chairman of the Osborne & Barr Agency, headquartered in St. Louis, and they've worked with clients ranging from DeKalb Seed to Michelin Tires. And with the likes of, well, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Ag Statistics Service and the United Soybean Board. Also worthy of note, Orion, was the report that came out this week from the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City looking at the agriculture credit conditions. And the Fed in Kansas City noted that more bankers have reported additional declines in the situation of farmers. The fourth quarter of 2015 was the 11th consecutive quarter of lower farm income in that district served by the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City. Among 190 survey respondents of those small town bankers, those ag bankers, only three of the 190 indicated farm income was higher than a year ago, whereas 166 reported income had declined, and 81% of those respondents, 81% of the ag bankers, indicated they expect income to be even lower for this current quarter. This is also interesting to note when you take a look at the debt-to-asset ratio that is currently projected. The Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City is looking at a farmer debt-to-asset ratio of 16.1, and that is up from the current projection of the Department of Agriculture of 13.2. This is a noteworthy rise, the Kansas City Fed says, in the debt-to-asset ratio of farmers. However, they noted also it is still well below the levels observed during the farm bust of the 1980s. Orion?
Well, Max, thank you for that visit. And with the talk about the financial picture for a lot of farmers, this could become a busier time for the farm credit system and for rural banks. Max talked about that with Todd Van Hoos, who is the president and CEO of the Farm Credit Council, and discussed their role in the farm financial picture.
The Farm Credit Council represents the farm credit system in Washington. We handle legislative work, regulatory work, and a lot of public affairs work.
And the Farm Credit System, of course, still the biggest ag lender in America?
I think so. We crossed the $300 billion asset threshold this year. Still have the same mission for 100 years, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable and consistent credit, good times and bad. It's a very important part of what we do.
That has been a challenging job at times. When you think of the peaks and troughs in the agriculture economy, how are we doing these days?
Well, it's tough out there. I think anybody would tell you that. We've seen commodity prices fall. We've seen land values decline, although not too much yet. Good news in California, it's been raining. So we've got some tough times ahead. You listen to USDA's economic forecast. I think we believe this is a couple of year long cycle. We certainly are working with customers right now through spring renewal season. This is a heavy renewal season in the Farm Credit System as people come in to finance their planting. So far, so good. We're seeing strong balance sheets from farmers right now. We're coming off a couple of years of good income, so we're pretty optimistic we can see this thing through.
The carryover from that sustained period of profitability has certainly helped, has it not, in helping maintain the portfolio of the Farm Credit System?
Oh, no question, no question. You know, you have really a long series of pretty good years in agriculture, and we go into this proud, you know, downturn in cycle, and we see strong balance sheets. We see some cash reserves with our customers, and so they're entering it in good shape. Now, that's not true across the board. You know, dairy's been up and down. Other sectors have been impacted by weather, so you can't make blanket statements. But by and large, we go into this with a pretty strong balance sheet.
I've said different times over the years, there's almost always one segment of the ag economy that's experiencing some challenges.
It seems like that. You know, if it's not dairy, it's cattle. If it's not cattle, it's grain. If it's, you know, for a long time, it was anything related to the housing industry, things like forest products, things like nurseries, things like that. So there's always seems to be cycles. But in truth, that's one of the strengths of the Farm Credit System, because when you're a nationwide network of almost 80 cooperative lenders, you can diversify your portfolios. You're always going to have this segment or that segment that's having a tough time, but American agriculture is amazingly resilient, and we're very fortunate to finance all of it.
Let's talk about your celebration. It's a big event, an important milestone for the system.
It's 100 years. You know, not many organizations get to be 100 years old. We're very proud of that. But importantly, you know, we made a decision, as you and I were talking earlier, we made a decision early on. We could use this anniversary to look backwards or forwards, and we very much chosen to look forward because we think there's great opportunity in rural America. We think American agriculture is one of the most powerful pillars of our economy, both in this country and across the world, and so we see a great future out there.
The individuals you are spotlighting, give us a little bit of a feel for the diversity of this bunch. As you look, I mean, it's a remarkable group. A lady who cranks out educational videos about agriculture, one of the most respected agriculture economists in America. It's an interesting list.
You're talking about Barry Flinchbaugh, and I don't know anybody in agriculture who doesn't know Barry and have a great deal of respect for him. You're on Capitol Hill right now, and I can tell you there's a legion of his minions who have gone through K-State that work in agriculture in this town, and so it's absolutely a pleasure to honor him. You know, Josh Eilers. A real American hero. You know, people throw that name around a lot, hero, but this is a real American hero. He's an Army Ranger, four back-to-back deployments to Afghanistan, Iraq, Purple Heart recipient. Now he's a rancher in just outside of Austin, Texas, raises a purebred Wagyu beef cattle operation, supplying all those fantastic restaurants in Austin. As great a success story as that is, what really separates Josh is he's helping the University of Texas establish programs that are going to encourage more veterans to get into agriculture, and that's something we can all get behind.
Especially when you consider some of the challenges our veterans, newer veterans face in terms of PTSD, agriculture can really play an important, amazing role in helping them recover.
No question about that. You know, one of the things people often hear Tom Vilsack, our Secretary of Agriculture, talk about is the really disproportionate representation in America's military from rural communities. And as we see a lot of those veterans come back, they're going to have to be integrated into our economy. And one of the great opportunities for them is agriculture. And so we're working with organizations like Farmer Veterans Coalition, with programs like Homegrown by Heroes, to really try to ease that transition and make opportunities for our veterans coming home.
Todd, it occurs to me, and maybe this is one of your goals in this program, is for these profiles to be inspirational, for them maybe to spark a desire some kind of an interest in a younger person, maybe even an older person, that they can do some great things in the ag community.
That's exactly right. But, you know, we selected 100 of these, and the hardest thing we had to do, frankly, was get it to 100, because we had more than 1,000 nominations, and every one of those stories was inspirational. And if you think about the story of a dairy farmer in upstate New York who's on the Farm Credit East board, who also is producing educational videos for American children to learn about where their food comes from. A lot of people in this country don't really understand that anymore, and we think that connection to the farm needs to be reestablished. We think that is important for the fabric of our society and certainly important for farmers and ranchers moving forward. So we're happy to play a role in that.
I gather over the months ahead, this will be unfolded for rural America to see, and they can get to know some of these people a little bit better.
We certainly hope so. We want to take every opportunity to showcase these folks as you say, inspirational role models for our people out in rural America, because they truly are amazing stories. You have a producer like Trevor Hoff out in New Windsor, Maryland, who was nearly killed in a farm accident at age 14. While he's still recovering, he starts his own beef jerky operation, right, selling it locally. That's now evolved into a local co-op that provides food across his rural community there in rural Maryland. It's just an inspirational story, and there are hundreds like that in this program.
Todd Van Hoos, president, CEO of the 100-year-old Farm Credit Council, where prices in the commodity world will start the week when we continue on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today, and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
We managed to end trade on this first day of the new month and the new quarter with a green page for the grain market after the heavy losses that corn took earlier in the week. So we'll start the trade on Monday with May wheat at $4.75¾. After it gained just half a cent a bushel today, May corn will start the week at $3.54 after gaining 2 cents today following yesterday's sharp sell-off. And then May soybeans will start the week Monday at $9.18¼ after gaining 8 cents a bushel in the week-ending market today. It was a tough week for livestock producers and an up-and-down week for cattle producers after the big build in corn acres announced yesterday. The feeling was that that'll encourage more cattle feeding and maybe some stronger prices. We saw feeder cattle yesterday up the $4.50 limit for the day. But today, it's pretty much a red screen. April lean hogs will start the week Monday at $67.80 a hundredweight after dropping 55 cents today, and the June hog contract, $79.47 after dropping $1.37 today. April live cattle managed to end the day higher, so it will start trade Monday at $133 a hundredweight after gaining 7 cents today. The rest of the live cattle prices were down. And then the April feeder cattle contract will start trading Monday at $155.75 after dropping $1.32 for the day. So it's, again, been a tumultuous week in many ways in the markets on Wall Street and the markets at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, but I guess that's the duty of markets, to react on a daily basis to what traders see happening with the numbers. So thank you for joining us, Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson. We'll see you next week on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.